So I'm very happy I get to tell you about my tourism works in collaboration with Andy Weiler and a group of fantastic PhD students in Munich. So Ruben Balkin, who's now postdoc at Technion, as well as Konstantin Springman and Stefan Stetz. Before I tell you about these works, let me say that they are part of a larger program to study the physics of light scalars at finite density. So this program is motivated by some of the most interesting problems in particle physics, especially the cosmological constant or the electroweak hierarchy and the strong CP problem. So I became interested in this line of research already 6 years ago when at Cornell University, where we started wondering about potential tests of the ground state energy in circumstances different from our current vacuum, as it is the case in the core of neutron stars. So more recently, we have investigated how the properties of the QCD axion change in systems with large baryonic densities, once again, such as neutron stars. And the last works that, as you will see, are strongly connected, are about how dense astrophysical objects could in fact trigger a change in the zero temperature, zero density ground state of our universe. Okay, so let me start with a cool and I hope useful analogy of what we have found. So I'm not sure if you have ever seen this little experiment, which it seems you can do at home with sufficiently pure water. So you can bring it to temperatures below the standard freezing point without becoming ice, which would be the preferred lower energy state at such a low temperature. Well, so it turns out that once you introduce a seed into this supercooled water, in particular an ice cube, already in the true ground state, a phase transition is triggered in the whole system. So all the water freezes. Well, so what we have done is to show that this can happen as well at the fundamental level. So the universe is initially found in a metastable minimum, or it has been brought there, for instance, during a period of supercooling as it expanded. Then in that universe, gravity is able to locally create a seed, a dense enough star, within which the conditions are such that the true minimum can be reached. In particular, I will show that the metastable minimum disappears at finite density. So once such a seed is fully formed, specifically it must reach a critical size, it becomes energetically favorable for the entire universe beyond the dense system to transition to the true minimum on account of the fact that the energy of such a vacuum is lower. Okay, so let me tell you now what motivated us to look into this. So solid motivation is always super important for me. Although let me say that in hindsight, motivation in this case is kind of secondary, since I find it fascinating that this phenomenon is even possible. But anyway, so the main overall motivation is the idea of a landscape of vacuum in which scalar fields can be found in one of the many local minima of the potential. And in different minima, the low energy parameters we observe can take different values since they are set by the values of the scalar fields. And certainly the ground state energy of each vacuum, what we would identify as the cosmological constant, could be one such low energy parameter that varies in the landscape. So Weinberg realized that this would provide a rationale for the tiny size of the cosmological constant that we observe and can observe, along with a mechanism such that our universe in the right vacuum can be created among such a multitude of possible vacua. This is arguably the best explanation for the cosmological constant problem. That this is the right picture, that our universe is found in a vacuum that is not unique, would have profound implications for our understanding of particle physics. Although in some sense, that our universe is not fundamentally special is kind of a natural extrapolation of our old conceptions that our planet, solar system, or galaxy are unique. So the idea of a landscape has been put forward as well as a It's an explanation for the small value of the electroweak scale. So while this possibility might not seem as appealing as for the cosmological constant, and in fact it might conflict with it, the lack of experimental evidence for standard solutions of the electroweak hierarchy problem, say supersymmetry or compositeness, actually forces us to consider a change of paradigm. In the context of a landscape, this change has come in many different forms in the last few years. I will not quote here all the very interesting works that have appeared, but just mention that many of them have in common that the landscape is built from the bottom up. So in contrast, say, to the string theory landscape. These infrared landscapes have usually a specific structure and are more predictive. In fact, in many instances, a mechanism is built to preferentially select one minimum, ours, out of the many possible minimum. As I'm sure you all know, a prototypical example is the relaxion. So the scalar potential has this form that allows to select the electroweak scale during a period of early universe cosmological evolution. So this particular scenario has served as an inspiration for our work. And in fact, as I will show, is where we have applied most of our results, at least so far. In any case, so one of the most valuable things that these new ideas have brought is novel experimental signatures. In a context, cosmology and astrophysics, where new physics tied to the electroweak scale was not usually looked for, and where the experimental prospects are excellent. I think that's great. Now in this work, we want to go in this same direction, but trying to probe or to test what I believe is at the heart of these ideas, which is the presence of multiple vacuum. In fact, the claim impossibility to gain experimental information on other vacuum has been sometimes brought as a drawback of the landscape. And today I will show that this is not necessarily the case. So in this sense, our work is quite aligned with a very interesting work from a couple of years back by Anson and Yungu Curley, which I think both are here, no? Where bubbles of a minimum that is energetically favorable only at finite density were studied in the context of supernova explosions. So here, as you will see, some sense we have gone one step forward and explore the possibility that the true minimum is there regardless of density, but we are not initially in it. Instead, we only get to it thanks to the formation of stars. Okay, so let me start with the two main aspects of the system responsible for the transition between vacua. So the first is that stars are dense, which means that inside them, the expectation value of a given conserved number, for instance, baryon number, is non-zero. So note that in the non-relativistic limit, which we will focus on since temperature will be subleading, for us, this means that the fermion mass operator is also set by density. So it's then clear that when a scalar field couples to the fermion bilinear, its potential will be deformed when density is non-zero. And perhaps you're familiar with this because you know of chameleon fields, which are typical examples studied so far. So the second point is that stars have a finite spatial extent. So the system is non-homogeneous and non-isotropic. So this is reflected, of course, in the fact that in general, density has a non-trivial profile, vanishing at the surface of the star and being constant approximately at the center. And that in general, in particular, during the formation of the star, this density profile will depend on time. As I will show, the temporal dependence can be neglected in most cases. But the radial dependence cannot. And this is the main novelty with respect to vacuum transitions in the early universe, for instance, this spatial dependence. Okay, So let's go to the scalar potential. And to simplify the analysis to its bare bones, and not because I'm lazy, let us consider the smallest landscape, two vacuum. So the potential we work with is then a simple quartic potential and a linear term that breaks the degeneracy between the two minima. So I will usually call the coefficient of the linear term the rolling scale, while the coefficient of the quartic, I will call it the barrier for obvious reasons. So the potential depends on one more parameter, F, that sometimes I will call the K constant, which parameterizes where the minima are in field space. In this case, they are minus F and plus F. So it will be important to understand the form of this potential in a bit more detail. So for this, we found it convenient to introduce this parameter, delta, that parameterizes the relative difference between the rolling and barrier scales. So for there to be two minima, delta must be positive. Or in other words, the barrier must be larger than the rolling. So besides, there are two qualitatively different cases. In the first, which we call deep, the metastable minimum is at minus F, is separated by a large barrier from the true minimum, which is found at F. So this is delta close to one, or the barrier much larger than the rolling. So in this case, the mass of the scalar at in both minima is as usual, given by the barrier over the decay constant. Now the second shallow case corresponds to delta much smaller than one, or the barrier scale is very close, slightly larger than the rolling scale. Okay. So here the metastable minimum is about to disappear, being very close to the inflection point of the potential. And so this is reflected in the mass of the scalar, which in the metastable minimum is suppressed by that. So note that in both of these cases, the difference in energy densities between the minima is just set by the rolling scale, basically. So finally, if delta is negative, that is, if the rolling is larger than the barrier, there is only one minimum. Okay, so this is the potential. Very good. So now, even though finite density can modify this potential in many different ways, depending on how the scalar couples to matter, it is economic, predictive, and well-motivated that density deformations enter predominantly via an effective density-dependent barrier scale. Okay. But this happens automatically when the barrier is proportional to the vacuum expectation value of an operator in the standard model, sort of in the spirit of the Higgs as a trigger, which some of you may be familiar with. Now, this simplifying assumption, if you wish, provides a direct link between the potential in empty space and in medium, and in particular, generically leads to a smaller barrier at finite density. And I will show you some examples later. Still, I will also show you later a different scenario where the rolling term is the one that becomes density dependent. We get to it. Towards the end of my talk. Okay, so then it's very easy to understand what will happen at finite density. Since we are just decreasing the effective, so the difference between the barrier and the rolling scales, or in other words, delta. Okay, so this is what happens when the medium barrier becomes small enough. Okay, from here to here, which happens at what I define a critical density, and see, the metastable minimum disappears and the scalar field is in principle free to classically move to the true minimum. And this can happen irrespective of the metastable minimum being deep, as I showed you here, or being shallow, as I showed you here. So the only difference is that all other things equal, in the shallow case, a relatively small finite density deformation is enough to tip the balance and make the metastable minimum disappear. So by the way, to figure out if density, if the density deformation is sufficiently large or not, or in other words, to know what the critical density is, I need to specify the form of the density dependent. Ah, hi.
Sorry.
No, I pressed
the wrong thing and I realize I'm clapping. Sorry. I have a question about cosmology here. So you're assuming we're sitting today in vacuum, we're in the false vacuum, and when you go in the study, you go in the real vacuum?
So this I will discuss it later, but...
Ah, you'll discuss later about the cosmology, because, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, then I'm gonna remove my hand, sorry.
No, it's fine. But what I can tell you is that we set ourselves in the situation where before stars are formed, we are in the false metastable minimum, and afterwards we transition to the true minimum, the one that we are to
be. Yeah, but I guess my question is the following. In the early universe, we reach densities much higher than stars. So how do you ensure that the transition didn't happen in the early universe?
Well, that's not necessarily the case, and also temperatures are not the same as density. They don't have to.
I agree, but I'm telling you that you need to check the cosmology that we are indeed given that, for example, in stars, have the stars like the sun have densities that, well, we know the universe was MeV densities at BBN times that we have information for. So I know it's not the same, but that's why I'm asking, how do you ensure that you're in the right spot to begin with, cosmologically, for the parameters that you're using? Have you checked this?
So it's definitely a very good question, but in some sense, what we would argue is that, or what I would like to argue is that we are discussing a situation where we don't care how we got to the minimum, okay? That we are sitting in now, just that we are there, okay? So I wanna forget about cosmology. So some mechanism drove me to the minimum where I am, the metastable one. And now I see what happens in the cold universe.
Yeah, but I'm confused about the logic in this, because if you're excluded, if there's no way you can put
yourself
where you want, then, I mean,
Definitely. But I can show you examples.
Ah, okay. If you have examples where everything works out, that's all I want to know.
What I will show you is examples, in particular in this relaxion, yes, where people have mm-hmm. checked that we are at a given minimum, and all the minima in the relaxion are metastable, yes. And in some of those minima, we have checked that the transition could happen because of stars and not before.
Ah, okay, then you'll talk about it later. Okay, then we'll come back to it. Thank you, yes.
Okay.
Doesn't the bubble just mess up your star forming in the first place? Because presumably this will happen before the star actually forms. Then densities become higher as the star is forming.
Exactly, so this will happen as the star forms.
But the bubble couples to the density. So when it forms, wouldn't it just eject all the gas and then prevent the star from forming?
Well, that's not necessarily the case. It depends on how the bubble back reacts on the environment. Mm-hmm. We have checked in some of the cases that the back reaction doesn't have to be such that the star explodes or it doesn't form.
Okay.
Still, it's a very good point, and we would still claim, okay, that if stars of the type that could trigger the transition cannot form, this is already a result that would tell you that this is not realized in particular. Yes. So it's another, can be reinterpreted as another potential experimental signature, okay? That stars of different kind, of the kind that would trigger the transition, could have never formed.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, so yeah, so thanks for the questions. And so what I was saying is that if I want to know what the critical density is, I need to specify the form of the density dependent barrier. And this will do also later for specific models. Oops. Which are otherwise quite generic, since what I will be fixing is what's the operator in the standard model that gives rise to the barriers. Okay. So in fact, I can already advance that the two operators that I will be considering today, basically because they are the ones involved in the relaxion, are these two. So in models of the relaxation of the Lotterewick scale, the barrier term is either proportional to the vacuum expectation value of the quark mass operator or proportional to the Higgs squared operator, okay? In two typical realizations, yes. So both of them depend on the Higgs, and this is why the relaxion potential is sensitive to what happens with the Lotterewick scale. So besides, let me note also that the barrier term of the relaxion is a cosine and not a quartic potential. But this is mostly irrelevant because whenever we zoom in into adjacent minima, we find our two vacua landscape. Okay. So I will give you some more details later on. But for now, this is what I wanted to say, that our analysis does not actually care how we got to one type of metastable minima on the stable minimum or the other, because its fate at finite density does not actually depend on that. Okay, and as far as I know, I can tell you that we have checked that stars could drive a transition to the next minimum for relaxion minima like this one that are shallow, that is in principle viable from a cosmological point of view, in the sense that we could have a cosmology where we could have reached that particular metastable minimum. Okay, so very good. So
Javier, like, may I ask a question like about the last time? Like, is that the first minimum you reach is going to be somewhere like where Sita is auto one?
Sorry, say that again.
Like the first minimum you reach in the relaxion dynamics would be like a zeta order one, right?
Yeah. Well, zeta order one, yes. So indeed, so that's a very good point. So in the sense that if the relaxion is just like an axion that gets its potential from QCD, it's known that it cannot sit in one of the first minima because then beta QCD, as you were saying, is over the one. Okay, so this would be already ruled out. But in the case that the barrier or the so-called back reaction term is generated by some other dynamics, as it is the case when the barrier depends on the Higgs squared, I don't know anything about that QCD, so it's totally okay to sit at one of the first minima. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying?
I just wonder, like, if you would, in those minimum, since you will need to do BBN in this minimum, would you change BBN by too much?
I'm not sure why.
When you're taking a relaxant that doesn't set the theta QCD parameter, right?
Exactly. I will discuss both cases. This is the case of the what I call the QCD relaxion, which is like the axion but with a tilde. I will discuss it just to show that how it works out, okay, but it's clearly ruled out. But I will also discuss this other case that doesn't have anything with QCD. It's the axion of another dark confining sector.
So, okay. Thanks.
No, thank you for the question.
Sorry, I have one more question on this. So is that case tuned? Because there you have something that needs to couple to quark. So it will get some mass from the QCD condensate that will have to cancel to some precision with whatever contribution you have, whatever dark sector. So
what will you have a coupling to quarks?
I mean, how do you change the density?
You have
density dependent effects. You talk about it.
So that's a great question, okay? But the point is that since this realization of the relaxing, the non-QCD one, okay, doesn't know anything about QCD. Beta QCD, as we discussed, is completely relevant to the discussion. People have showed that I can be sitting in a shallow minimum, okay? It can be very shallow, okay? Now, even a small deformation at finite density, which can come just by the fact that the Higgs couples to baryons, and this shifts the VEF of the Higgs, it's enough to throw me out of the metastable minimum and towards the...
Yeah, but then if it's very shallow, then why did you end up there in the first place cosmologically? This is where I don't understand how these are two consistent things.
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know the specific, I don't know the answer now, although I remember that, I remember that even if you're sitting in one of these very shallow minima, and say you heat up the system such that indeed what you were saying, the relaxing kind of start rolling, the temperature, as I remember well, drops down very fast. So at the end of the day, the relaxion doesn't really move very much, okay? So it won't be in the first, it won't be in the 10th, but for all matter and purposes, we don't care if it's the first or the 10th.
I mean, the temperature doesn't drop out that far. I mean, you have, anyway, it's not, that's not clear to me at all, but carry on.
I think the point was like, in the early universe, you have Hubble friction, so like the field cannot roll very fast. And now, like, you have all the time in the world, so like you can do much more. That's I think like the original experience.
What is the lifetime of this very shallow vacua?
I know. So the lifetime, the quantum mechanical lifetime. Yes. So this can be very long because it depends. So since it's very shallow, basically, it's very suppressed due to the field distance between the two within two minimum. This we checked, and it's also towards the very end of my talk. I wanted to mention.
Okay, let's go.
No. It's fantastic.
Because if you're gonna talk about it later, I'd rather see the details because it's.
Yeah,
not,
no, no. So
I'm sorry, but it's not clear to me at all. But carry on. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's great. It's great. Thanks. Now, where was I? Yes, so I was saying, even if the metastable minimum disappears in a dense environment, as I was claiming it does, or can happen, this doesn't necessarily mean that the scalar field will actually move from its initial value in empty space. So this is basically because density is confined to a finite region of space, in the star, of course. So the actual answer to this question depends on depends on the dynamics of the scalar field profile, okay? So of what I call the scalar bubble. Okay. So before I tell you about how we understand these dynamics of the scalar bubble, let me tell you the results of our numerical simulations, okay? So later I will analytically explain them or perhaps I will go very, very fast through it and go to the questions that are very good. So in these four plots, I'm showing you the potential as a function of the scalar field and radius, okay? Where the origin, where the star forms is closer to you. So it's here, okay? Now, as I explained, the potential depends on density. So here I have treated its density dependence by a particular realistic density profile. So this is why it's product in terms of radius instead of density. Okay. So each of the plots corresponds to different times, but much like in the analogy I showed you at the beginning of the talk. So the profile of the scalar field is also shown by the black line. So in the first panel, there is no star. Okay? So the field just sits at the minimum in empty space, which recall is the metastable one. Now in the second plot, the star has appeared, which you can see because the barrier between the two minima, this one and the two minima, this one went down. So in fact, it decreased sufficiently for the metastable minimum to disappear inside. And still, the size of the star is not very large. So it is not energetically favorable for the scalar field to move all the way to the true minimum, which is here. So this can only happen when the star gets to a critical size, as shown in this third panel. Okay. So here we find a full and thin bubble, okay, that has been formed. Okay. So the most interesting part is the last one. So it turns out that as soon as the bubble is fully formed, as soon as we get here, an instability can take place in which the bubble, which as you see, it is originally, as I was saying, confined within the star, can surpass the potential barrier present in vacuum. So, and expanding beyond the star into infinity. Okay. So this is basically what we checked happens. And what I was thinking to do now is to explain what we did, or the understanding that we got of this phenomenon. So let me spend some time on this, but I will try to go quick. So a priori, we would need to solve the scalar field equation of motion, okay? So one good simplification is that at supercritical densities, when the metastable minimum has already disappeared because the barriers are too small, the potential around that point is well approximated just by the linear term. So this means that the dynamics of the scalar field is basically controlled by this scale, mu. And interesting things happen for distances and times of order 1/μ. Okay. Now, so in particular, let me define the core of the star, okay, where densities are supercritical. And this core has a size RT, okay, which is, of course, smaller than the total size of the star. So this difference will be important later, but generically they are order one apart. So then it is clear that the field can move order one in units of F if RT times mu is of order one. This is what we learned because of mu is the relevant scale. Now for typical stellar processes, the time it takes to form a large enough core such that the field displacement is order one is much longer than the size of the core. Okay. So therefore, as a first approximation, it is enough to solve the equation of motion disregarding the time dependence of the scalar field. So we can solve it in steps. And in each step, the only thing that changes is the size of the core. Okay. This is what we will do. Now, so this is clear, then it's easy to understand what's going on. At the initial phase of the formation of the star, the core is small. The field in the core can only move so much from its value outside the star. And this is because the field gradient costs energy. And this can only be compensated up to a point by the gain in energy density associated with the field trying to move to a deeper part of the potential. Okay? So as expected, the field profile looks like this and is determined by the scale.
Can I ask you something very, very quickly? I'm a bit, so How deep is the new minimum? So, I mean, is the idea that right now, after this transition happened, the CC is whatever value has now, and before the stars were formed, the CC was much higher everywhere in the universe?
That's right, yeah. That's
so, but then how did the stars form to start with? Because do stars form if you have a CC-dominated universe? Stars form in matter domination because...
That's a secondary question, I would say. Okay. So I get to the idea, or you totally got to the point that what will happen is that there is a change in the vacuum energy before and now, okay?
Yeah.
And I know not only because the stars couldn't form in such a vacuum energy dominated universe,
yeah,
but just because of many information that we have, that the vacuum energy before cosmic dawn couldn't be much larger than the one we have observed today. And that would be enough. That will constrain, in some sense, my potentials. Okay? And in some sense, we use this fact to constrain a part of the relaxing parameter space. Okay? Definitely. So that's what
I see. Okay, go ahead.
Now, I also would like to mention, and I will mention it also later, like at 9 p.m. here in Europe or something like this, where that it will depend the size of the change in vacuum energy or cosmological constant will be correlated with the size of the stars that drove the transition. Okay, basically, you can see it here. So let me go through this slide.
Okay.
So, When the core gets large enough, the field inside it can reach the true minimum. Okay? So this is what I will call the formation of the bubble. And the condition such that this happens is that the size of the core is larger than 1/μ, which here I rewrite again as F over the Rolling scale squared. So the field profile looks as usual. It's just the bubble, okay, connecting the two minima. Constant inside the bubble, then the bubble wall, where the field transitions from the true minimum to the false minimum, and then constant again for radii larger than the star's core. Okay, so nothing unexpected. Now you can already see here that the rolling term is what determines the change in CC. Okay. So for the bubble to form, I get the condition that the change in CC will have to be larger, I just trade these two, than F over the size of the core, which is more or less the size of the star squared. Okay. Now, let me fix F to, and this I will do, 10 TeV. For the largest stars in the universe, which are of order 10 to the 9 kilometers, okay, the change in CC is of order the one that we observe today or that we infer from Landekisi. Okay? For the same order. And this to me is not clearly ruled out. Okay? Still, I could even take a smaller decay constant F. Okay. Now nothing to do with the relaxion. It's just scalar potential. Its whole size is very small. So I could have easily a change in vacuum energy that is 2, 1, 2, 3 orders of magnitude smaller than the one that we extract from the CDM. Okay. So that before cosmic dawn and after cosmic dawn, the change in vacuum energy was 10 to the minus 2, say. I would say this is, I don't see how this is ruled out. And I don't see how this would affect formation of stars. Okay. CC was dominant, was subdominant before cosmic dawn and remains subdominant after until today. Nothing changes in this regard.
Would you be able to see the bubble walls? Because like if the bubble walls become relativistic, their energy is huge, right?
Yes, indeed.
Would you be able to sort of see something there?
So I would expect so. We haven't actually, so thanks for the question. I think it's great. We haven't actually looked into it. Because in some sense, this would be the second order question, although perhaps it's the most interesting one, trying to look for signatures of this happening. Okay. Let me just mention that everything is controlled at the end of the day by the size of the vacuum energy change. Okay. So I believe that at least in the limit where this change is very small, the signals would be small as well. So I don't know at which level we could be sensitive to what energy change. I don't know. It's an excellent question. Okay, so this is just a little detail that once the full bubble is formed, so we are assuming that it continues to be stuck here at the edge of the core. And if the core keeps growing, the wall becomes thinner and thinner, since the thickness is basically mu times the size of the core inverse. Okay? However, we know that this will not continue like this forever. So as a matter of fact, either the star stopped growing before the bubble fully formed, or otherwise, it's best to treat the bubble as a dynamical object, okay? With its energy here as a function of radius, and the radius now to be determined by its own equation of motion. Okay? So the energy of the thin wall bubble is to first approximation given by a volume term, which scales with the energy density, basically the energy density between the different minimum, within the two minima. And a surface term with the scales with the wall tension, which is a standard to call it sigma. Now the main novelty is that the tension is not constant, but depends on the position of the wall. So the whole point why the bubble is formed is that the barriers decrease as the density increases. So the bubble tension must know the barriers reappear when expanding towards vacuum. Yes. So in fact, this is why up to this point, we kept the wall at the place where the barriers reappear. Now, and this is totally encoded in the equation of motion of the bubble, which besides the usual volume energy force and surface tension force, it gets an additional force also contracting this sigma prime, which is the derivative of the tension with respect to the radius. Okay? And this extra force is larger in absolute terms, the faster the barrier reappears towards the end of the star. So to understand if the bubble can actually expand or not beyond the star and in empty space, in practice, it is enough to note that this new force does not decay with R, in contrast to the surface tension, which does. So because of this, we find that generically, it is this new force that eventually determines if the bubble escapes or not from the star. So, and by the way, this is why I was differentiating between the core of the star and the total size of the star, okay? Because I can estimate this variation of the tension as the tension outside minus tension at the core divided by size. It's very simplistic modeling of how the tension changes. However, this simple estimate in the two limiting types of metastable minima are enough. Okay? In the shallow case, there is barely any difference between the potential at supercritical densities than at zero densities. So the change in tension is basically nothing. Okay, it's very small. So in the shallow case, the bubble escapes as soon as it forms. Okay, that's the conclusion. So this is certainly different in the case of a deep minimum, where the large increase in tension, okay, there's a large increase in tension basically because the barrier scale, which determines the tension outside of the star in empty space, is much rather than the rolling scale, which determines the tension at the edge of the core. So in this case, this makes the escape condition much more stringent than the formation condition for a bubble connecting tip. Okay. Now we come to an impasse. So we have found that starting with a metastable minimum in empty space, inside a star, a bubble of the true minimum can classically form. This is completely classical, and then escape from it. And we understand why this can happen. So what are the consequences? So as I was saying, I think our answer is super conservative, and it can be greatly improved. Okay. But to start, let me recall that in the history of our universe, the first stars were born around redshifts around 10, just after, so at the end of the Dark Ages. This is known as cosmic dawn. Okay. So to my knowledge, even the first Newton stars, which are the densest stars, were born around that time. So I think it's fair to assume then that the right type of stars, dense and large enough, okay, to trigger a transition from the metastable to the true minimum, could have done it then, okay, during cosmic dawn. So in addition, the sole reason why the bubbles of true minimum can expand beyond the star and in empty space is because of the lower vacuum energy, as we have discussed. So that means that if the bubble successfully covered our patch of the universe, there should be a difference in the vacuum energy before and after the transition, before and after cosmic dawn. Now, this is what I was mentioning before. So just some numbers. Assume a phase transition triggered by a neutron star, okay, with radii of about 10 kilometers, which besides that, so neutron stars, besides the densest, are also the smallest. Okay. So this means that at the very least, the formation condition of a bubble, which is this one over here, which is the weakest, as I was saying before, if it's satisfied, it implies a lower bound on the energy density difference between the minima and therefore a lower bound on the change in vacuum energy. And we find that for F of order 10 TeV, this change is huge. Okay. So this is obviously ruled out, it cannot happen. Okay. Now,
I have one more question. Sorry, F of 10 TeV, isn't that too large? This is the coupling to the quarks as well, to the
F of 10 TeV.
That's a large coupling to quarks if it's there. Is this constrained by meson decays?
Yeah. So absolutely, yes. In the sense, if the density deformation, okay, arises because of the scalar couples to quarks. But this is not necessarily the case. I was saying it could just be that this scalar couples to the Higgs, but it is in a shallow minimum. So just a small density deformation is enough to trigger the transition. Okay.
So what is the effective coupling to quarks in this case?
So the effective coupling to quarks, I don't know, that's a good question, but I would have to, it's like a Higgs portal coupling. Yes, I have my scalar coupling.
Yeah, but then how much is the mass of this guy?
So it depends, it certainly depends on F and on this. So the mass of this guy would be basically like the same of the QCD axion, but rescaled by this new QCD-like confinement sector, no? Which could be around QCD or below QCD. Okay, and this is in particular in the case where it sits at a minimum that is like standard deep.
Okay? Yeah, but I'm confused because in order for this, so you're assuming that the scalar to be affected, the potential has to be very shallow. So the Compton wavelength is at least the size of the star, or can it affect it if it's larger?
So the quantum wavelength in vacuum.
Yeah.
So it's so in empty space, it would be given like this. Okay. This is the new QCD scale. It's like the axion, but with a suppression delta that parameterizes how shallow this is. Take 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3. It's some orders of magnitude smaller.
Yeah, but
this is the one in vacuum. But it doesn't have anything to do with the actual size of the bubble when it forms.
Yeah, but then why isn't there a constraint from stellar cooling bounds, from fifth forces, from all sorts of things? Because this will couple to quarks.
At some level, it will couple to quarks, definitely.
I mean, and if you start with a coupling of 10 to the 1 over F of 10 to the 1 over 10 TeV, that's a very large coupling, even with mixing with the Higgs. If you have down to, let's say, I don't know, millimeter wavelengths, we know the coupling to quarks has to be like less than gravity for a scalar.
Yeah, so if it's sufficient, yeah, that's true. Yeah. For a scalar, yes. And in this particular case, it couples to Higgs squared.
It couples to quarks. I mean, forget about the Higgs doesn't save you. It may save you for meson decays, which is not clear to me there, but.
I can make a comment here. Like, if you have like a phi squared over some F squared times some like a Elstern model, like the F that we constrain right now from star cooling is roughly like 10 T.
You mean
operator that they wrote, yeah. Like if you just replace lambda B with L standard model, every term in the standard model.
Sorry, this model has a linear coupling to quarks. What is phi? There is a linear coupling. That's not coming from quarks. How does it couple?
No, like the term that they write down, it's only.
So like, it's Higgs squared cosine phi over F in a particular relaxing case. What I know, or people have investigated the constraints from this type of experiments, and it's in principle it's in principle not ruled out, like by.
But you're not sitting at the precise minimum, so you're not at phi equals zero. It's true if phi is centered at zero. If you have a rev a priori, if the minimum is shifted, you have a linear coupling.
So,
theta, the effective theta has to be like the shift. I mean, it must be really small.
I don't know if we are misunderstanding each other. Is take Higgs squared cosine phi over F.
Mm-hmm.
That's my model, a portal, Higgs portal copying.
No, but you have the linear term too.
The linear term for phi.
Yeah, so that means that the minimum is not at zero.
That's right, yes, the minimum
is not at zero. So that means that when I have expand around the minimum,
sure.
I have phi plus theta,
yes.
And then the cosine phi will expand to have a linear coupling.
Sure, it will have a linear coupling to the Higgs squared, definitely.
Yeah, so that means it has a linear coupling to quarks. So there is a force.
No. I totally understand. I agree with you. I'm just saying that as far as I know, I can point you to a paper of Gilad and collaborators where they believed it could work constraining these type of interactions, yes?
But have you put everything together?
Yeah, as far as I remember, F10 TV is not necessarily ruled out. It's fine.
How much is the shift from the minimum, like from zero? How is the theta value? What is the theta value?
Could be ordered pi over two. Yes, it could be.
But then the coupling is huge. The linear coupling.
I'm not entirely sure if it's huge. As I'm saying. I don't completely agree.
There's a linear coupling to the Higgs. So maybe you get a suppression that goes like the mass squared of the Higgs over the mass of this guy. Maybe that saves you. But it's not clear it's not the linear. It's not clear at all. I don't see how this is. There is a linear coupling that's large.
Absolutely, yeah. So let us just keep it as it is not clear, and I would have to check. I'm sorry, I don't know by.
Yeah.
But and we have to check that paper. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And I think I will come back to this. Yeah. So okay. So let me go real quick. Maybe we can get there. So I was saying it's not clear where the bound is. So what we did is basically so try to understand recent works where they looked at trying to constrain how the energy budget of the universe is allowed to change between the early and late measurements. Yes. So I think I will be fast here, and I will just point you that the one that we actually used is this paper by Carbon and Kaminkowski, and we understood that the bound is around 100 times the actual value. So the value of the cosmological constant extracted from Landesitian. Okay.
So have you, from, yeah. When is the change happening? I mean, I'm sure that this factor of 100 depends strongly on.
Yeah, no. As this plot shows, this is where, so these different lines is depends on where the transition happens. Okay.
So this is for Z of 10. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and this is for Z of 10.
Okay.
In our case. That doesn't completely apply. It depends on the fate of the bubble, which we didn't want to care about. Just make the assumption that the vacuum energy was different. Okay, super conservative. That's what we get. Okay, so
sorry, and can I ask you yet? Maybe it's a related question. So why isn't the dynamic just dominated by gravity? Because the change that you can have in the CC is small, as you are saying, right? So okay, this field sees a smaller CC on the other vacuum, but it's not that much smaller. And in the center of the star, the main source of energy is just the matter gravity.
That's a very good point. So you're basically telling me, and this we, so thanks, this we check. So
okay.
In the question of motion of the bubble.
Yeah.
Yes. So there is one more additional force, which is just
gravity. Right.
So it gives another one correction at most to the question of motion.
Okay. Oh, so it's coincidentally of the same order?
Well, it's all the same order when the bubble is just outside of the star. Okay. That's where it's order one. So if it's inside of the star, there is less mass, so it's basically negligible. And when it's very far apart, it's basically gone because it decays very fast with R. So yeah, thanks.
Oh, I see. But then why doesn't the bubble just like bounce back or do something like that? I don't know. Can you have that?
So, in principle, I think it could happen. So definitely is much more generic that it happens in the case of the bubbles studied by Curley and Anson. That is what happens there.
Okay, I see.
But in our case, I think it would be in a special arrangement of forces.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So now, here we come back to this, yes, to the specific realization or what we inspired us to look into this, the reaction. I just want to say, so here, I'm sure you all know that the Barrier term depends itself on the scalar field phi, okay? Because the Higgs mass and therefore the Higgs depth depend on phi, okay? And I'm making these two assumptions. So the Barrier knows about the Higgs, therefore this is why the Barriers increase with the field value, and this is why I can select the right Higgs vacuum. So they are different in this sense, okay? So for the QCD relaxion, the barrier terms basically can be written as lambda QCD and Higgs, the value of the Higgs over the electro weak scale. While for the non-QCD relaxion, the barriers arise from a new technicolor sector, technicolor, a confining sector. I changed the name of the confinement scale just to differentiate, and it scales with the Higgs squared. Okay. So I was saying that in both cases, there are shallow minima. And the presence of this shallow minima, or this small parameter delta in this first minima, is because basically the cutoff has to be large. Okay. If you want the cutoff to be large, there will be those minima. Now, for the QCD relaxing, yes. The barrier terms change because the QQ bar condensate change and in fact decreases the finite density. This is very well known. And of course, since this guy cannot be very close to one because I would go past the perturbative calculation this result is based on, the analysis holds for the shallow QCD relaxing, okay? One can do the math and get the conditions on the density and the radius of the star such that the bubble escapes. And one finds that it always escapes if the cutoff is larger than 1 TeV and the decay constant is smaller than M Planck. That's in some sense reassuring. It works well, okay? But of course, this was already ruled out, okay? Because for those shallow minima, that QCD is over the pi over 2. Okay, so never mind. Now, for the non-QCD relaxion, okay, as I was mentioning before, it is the Higgs change at finite density that determines the behavior of the barrier term with density. Notice that it's basically the same as before, but instead of m pi f pi squared, I have m Higgs d squared, exactly the same, up to a factor of square root of 2, I remember. And of course, this cannot be very close to one either, so it will apply to shallow minima. And one can do the math again, and one can get the condition that the star is dense enough, as well as that the star is large enough for the bubble to form and escape. And as I was saying, we try to understand what the available parameter space was, and we could cover regions that were not otherwise covered. Okay. So this goes for large decay constants, where basically the excluded regions, which are the colored regions, by the way, have this form because above the star is not dense enough, and below the star is not large enough. And here I'm plotting three different types of stars, okay, Newton stars in red, white dwarfs in blue, and main sequence stars like the sun in green, okay? Now, when I go to smaller decay constants, one covers more parameter space, okay? And again, for all these types of stars, they are sufficiently small such that the change in vacuum energy is clearly ruled out, okay? So I don't have to worry about the actual bound.
So can I ask you, what is the, so here F is what F, it's not the 10 to the 10 GeV that you had before, this is another F?
So,
10 no, no, GeV, it, sorry. It, I'm confused about your, and the black line, what is the black line?
Yeah, so very good, sorry. So here, before I was quoting the number 10 TeV just yeah. for illustrative purposes, okay? It just was to show that for very small stars, even if I take the smallest F, the change in vacuum energy is way too huge, okay? So for larger Fs, okay? So let me go back to, so the change goes like F. So these larger Fs could have never, so the change would be tremendously high. So that's completely ruled out, okay? And this is what we are doing here. Drawing out parameter space of the relaxion, this non-physical relaxion that was available before we realized that vacuum transitions would have happened. Yes. Now, the black line is basically above the black line. You can show that during inflation, okay, this particular mechanism of selecting the right minimum during inflation works. Below, it doesn't work. So if you like that particular mechanism of getting to the right relaxation minimum, this would have been already ruled out. But this part above the black line, it was in principle available. We showed it is actually not.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So I will skip this. Now, just coming back to the beginning, I was making this assumption that basically finite density goes through a decrease in the barrier term. Okay. Of course, I was saying this is not the only possibility. And here I show a different scenario, where it's the rolling term that changes. And it doesn't change with matter density, it changes with an electromagnetic background, such as the one that you can find, which are huge around rotating neutron stars. Okay. This is again, if you were worried about if the previous relaxions were ruled out or not, this is even more in doubt from the experimental point of view. Okay. But still, I think there are some. It's still. Open in some parts of parameter space. Okay. Now the idea is the same. You have a background electromagnetic field. In this case, the scalar field couples to photons. Okay. And it's through since the coupling is linear, is the rolling term that changes. You know, show how is the potential for zero electromagnetic field and how it gets tilted and the metastable minimum disappears when the electromagnetic fields are large enough. And one can do the same analysis of the bubbles when they form, when they escape, okay? And we get as well constraints on the parameter space of this particular relaxion, both in the case of shallow and deep minimum, okay? Because a vacuum transition took place around rotating neutron stars because of their large electromagnetic fields.
Quick question about that. So since E dot B is the total derivative, the integral of E dot B is zero. So like on one part of the star, it'll be pointing in one direction and in the other, it'll be the other direction. Does that change anything?
Well, yeah, so that's excellent. That's an excellent point indeed. So we were assuming at least spherical symmetry in the previous discussion. Here, spherical symmetry is gone. You can see that this E dot B is spherically symmetric basically because we integrated over angles, okay? Now, what I would think it would happen is that the bubble would still form and expand, but it will have originally a weird deformed shape, okay? But I don't see why the shape would eventually matter or significantly matter. Would matter order one, but I wouldn't imagine that the...
Well, I guess the worry might be that since it's spinning, the area which is pointing in the right direction is constantly moving in space and time.
Yeah.
Pretty fast. And so it depends on sort of how quickly you roll to the other vacua. Whether or not you start rolling and then get pushed back and start rolling and get pushed back.
I understand that. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it could be. I'm not sure about this level of detail. It's definitely a good point. We just, tell you the truth, we just found it like, look, cool. There is another example where this could happen. Could happen, okay. Yes. But yeah, definitely. Thanks. Now, so some of the things that we are still thinking about. This, you, Anson, already mentioned it. If there are other probes, that's definitely a good question because we have many probes to test if a phase transition took place around cosmic dawn. Now, so vacuum decay. Now, so it could happen that even though the barriers decrease at finite density, they never decrease enough such that the metastable minimum disappears. Okay. Now, in principle, of course, one of the assumptions that we are making implicitly is that in vacuum, so in empty space, the decay rate is sufficiently small. Yes. If not, why should we care? Now, since the potential changes very little for a shallow metastable minimum from zero density to critical density, the action associated, the tunneling action won't change very much. Okay, so that's not a relevant case. But instead, for a deep minimum, one can compute the tunneling action in empty space in terms of the barrier and the rolling term is given by this, which can be very large, therefore the decay rate very suppressed. But at finite density, since the barriers are decreasing and it goes like the eighth power, I could get a huge enhancement of the decay rate inside medium, in medium. Okay. So I think this is interesting. It's definitely interesting. So people have considered before induced vacuum decay because of gravity around black holes. I think this is somewhat similar, perhaps less standard. But anyway, this is something interesting to look at. And finally, that's also very speculative. Forget about standard model densities, okay? But assume that there is, so in particular, this relaxion that gets its potential mainly from a dark QCD. Those baryons associated with dark QCD could well be stable. There could well be an abundance in the universe. And as long as they manage to cool down, they could form dark Neutron stars. And this is something that has been considered. It's not like we invent this possibility. It's out there. Now, this is relatively easy in the sense that if one considers dark neutron stars, it's very, they don't collapse because of Fermi degeneracy pressure. So one can easily compute or estimate their density and their size, and everything is controlled by the mass of the dark baryon. So therefore, how it decreases with density, it would also be controlled by the mass of the dark baryon. And the condition that if it's the star is large enough or not to create a bubble and expand is also controlled by the mass of dark baryon. In this case, relative to the confinement scale of this new sector. Yes. This is a it's a condition that is very easy to satisfy. Therefore, the change in vacuum energy is also determined by the dark baryon mass, and since I'm relatively free to up to a point to take this baryon mass to be relatively light. This is one example where I could get transitions happening at cosmic dawn or whenever these guys are formed. Yeah, which would be around the same time, that are way below two orders of magnitude for this particular choice, below the CC extracted from lambda CPM. And that's it. So I leave you with the conclusions. Thank you very much for the questions. It was great.
Thank you very much for the talk. We can virtually clap. Yeah, there are more questions, I see.
No, I pressed again the wrong thing. I want to press the clapping. And
wait a minute. Sorry. Yeah.
May I ask
a question? Like, for the relaxion, like, there's not only like two minimum, right? There's a huge number of them. What makes the evolution stop?
So that's a great question, and we actually looked into it. So I would say if one could. So indeed, if one can jump one minimum, okay, and nothing happens to the star, keeps growing, nothing prevents you from jumping to the next one. Okay. So this will continue happening, definitely, until, as far as I know, also as far as I can see, the barriers get too large.
Yeah.
Okay. But this is very far. This is in principle, it can be very, very far away from when you started. But this is the only thing that I can see that would stop. That would stop you. Now, I don't know if that's your question, or your question is if the barriers disappear, many of them will disappear, so the feed would be able to roll very down. That's not really relevant, because at the end of the day, the star has a size. So there's a string like holding the field at some point. Yeah, so it cannot go arbitrarily far away from the
initial. Yeah, then like the question is more like, will it be like some onion shape thing, like which keeps going, like one goes out, another one, like.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we understood, and in fact that's what we in our numerical simulations that we made. This is what happens. One goes out, and the next one, and the next one.
But then, wouldn't the change in CC be much larger?
Yeah,
it depends on the step, but yes, definitely.
Yeah, so the question is more like what stops us from going to like a negative in your case?
It depends on where you started. Because again, at some point you will find yourself in a minimum where perhaps the barriers are too tall. So the escape condition cannot be satisfied any longer.
And what determines that here? It's just like how.
So let me just neglect this difference. Let me say that they are, that this difference is of order the size of the star.
Yeah.
So it scales with the barrier. Okay.
Right.
Contrary to the formation, yes, which does not depend on the barrier and just depends on how steep the rolling is. Okay.
With the this parameter changes very, very slowly, right?
Yeah, indeed. It changes very, very slowly. So it will take many, many minima to get there. That's the only thing that I can see that would stop it.
Okay. I see. Okay.
Are you eternally inflating in the meantime? Do you get stuck and then you rely on tunneling to get you to the next one? So you're eternally inflating?
This is happening inside the star, right?
Oh, you mean inside the star? I mean the L cosmology. I'm actually
no, I'm asking inside the star.
So, yeah, inside the star, it would be it,
inside the star, but I'm still thinking about early cosmology.
Early cosmology, there was a paper by Catherine Fries, could be, that was looking into what happens. I just remember the paper and the name, not the content. Sorry, but they were precisely planning to do this. It's a good question. I don't know.
If you're really in a relaxion scenario, then the fact that you've changed which minima you are at by, let's say, a few wouldn't mean that the Higgs VEV in the early universe and now is quite different.
I didn't quote it. So in comparison with the change in CC, the Higgs VEV, it's completely negligible. It changes, definitely changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the effects that the change in the CC would have, it's absolutely much more important phenomenologically, because the change is suppressed basically by the relative change is suppressed by the cutoff for the case of the Higgs VEV. So.
Oh, okay.
So that makes it. So in relative terms, the change in CC is what determines the phenomenology.
So you're saying the change in Higgs VEV is like sort of milli EV or something like that. It's absolutely
tiny. Still, there are constraints out there on changes on the Higgs VEV, yes.
I think it
would have to be completely unrelated to this particular to this particular thing.
I think we can thank Javi again. Thank you.